It certainly is. Neil Slade is my guest, and this is Irresistible. It's a fax that just came in. Coincidence, or could it be working? Art, I captured the current weather conditions for Daytona Beach, Florida, which is one of the affected areas, both at 12:30 a.m. and at 1:30 a.m. our time. There does seem to be some condensing of water occurring, as you can see. I also looked at the Doppler radar maps for the area, and at both times, a green dot, which was not, repeat, not in the 12:30 a.m. photo, has now appeared in the 1:30 a.m. photo in Northeast Florida. Coincidence? Steve in Portland. Weather report for Daytona Beach, Florida, updated at 3:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7898. Temperature? 74 degrees Fahrenheit. Wind 3 miles per hour south-southwest. Relative humidity 95%. Current conditions, haze. Weather report for Daytona Beach, Florida, updated at 4:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 7898. Temperature 74. Winds 4 miles per hour. Now from the south. Relative humidity now 96%. Current conditions, light fog. Oh my. Well, if this works, we'll back now to Neil Slade, and thank you for holding, Neil, and the nice young lady who was on the air with us. You're back on the air again.
Yes, I'm still here.
Okay, good.
And I wanted to apologize to you. When I first came on, I was turning off fans because my husband's snoring in the other room and I couldn't hear you. He says I'm an art bell mad. I think he's right.
Well.
But I love you.
Thank you.
Okay, anyway, what I'd also like to ask, Neil, is this. I'm left-handed. Is there a difference or an enhancement to left-handed compared to right-handed people?
I recall reading something about this in one of Lingo's journals many years ago. I'll tell you what I know to be true. The right side of the brain controls the left side of the body's motor function. There's
right.
a crossover.
Mm-hmm.
Your left eyeball, for example, the optic nerves go to the left side. No, the left side eyeball goes to the right side of the brain to be computed, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Left-handed people. I'm trying to remember now what his journal writings were, tend to be more right brain dominant. If you're right-handed, you're more left brain dominant. Is it what I'm saying making sense?
Yes.
Okay. If you're left-handed, you tend to compute more visual, non-verbal, spatial, non-linearly types of, you tend to process things in that function because those are right, those are primarily right brain types of functions.
Mm-hmm.
Since there's a crossover, that's what your left-handedness shows, that you're more of an artistic type of person. Most of us who are right-handed tend to be left brain dominant, so we're very verbally oriented or linearly oriented. As you do your brain work and you start to play with your brain, what you do is you balance things out so that you don't become, that you become brain ambidextrous. So you
right.
can deliberately click from either being left brain dominant or right brain dominant. But the left-handedness, right-handedness just shows a slight predisposition towards one side or the other.
Well, I can also use my left hand as well as my right, except I have to write left-handed. And, I a while ago, whenever I was thinking, it just seemed like, you know, like sometimes you'll kind of slip off into sleep, But this was more of a kick. I mean, I just about jumped out of my bed. And it was so funny because I thought, gosh, that's never happened before.
Yes, well, I recently also had a very similar experience. Thank you very, very much. That was a good question. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Neil Slade and Art Bell. Hi.
Hello.
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 Yeah, this is Kevin from Golden, Colorado.
Golden, yay.
Right, we're next door. We're right next door to you, buddy.
Yeah. But, well, you know, Lint, the Brain Lab was about, you ever go to Blackhawk?
Yeah, I used to work up there.
Yeah, well, the Lingo's Brain Lab was located about 10 miles outside of Blackhawk, but at 10,000 feet altitude. So the Brain Lab was pretty close to, right in between Golden and Blackhawk there.
Wow, that's interesting. Right next door to me.
Yeah.
But, all right, I've been listening to you for about 2 weeks, and I can't stop. I've been up every night listening to you.
A two-week listener, huh?
I'm on a roll here.
All right.
But first thing, I was trying to tap into the rain thing in Florida, and when I was really tapped in, I felt like my eyes were shuddering, like I was in a REM sleep type of deal. That actually wasn't my question. My question was, let's say that you have a job or you're in particular sports, or that you just happen to be in a reptilian brain mode more often than somebody else.
Oh, this is going to be a good question, I can tell.
Would this affect how deep you can get into your frontal lobe consciousness, or is this just like a switch?
I can even make it a better question. If you begin, if you're in this reptilian mode most of the time, because you have that kind of job, you're an NFL player, whatever, who cares, and you begin doing what you are suggesting, Neil, would you then compromise your ability to function in that reptilian mode? Aha.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Actually, when you're trying to succeed at something, the more frontal lobes you use, the better your chances are succeeding. For example, okay, football players, okay?
Okay.
Now, everybody's certainly going to be in reptilian competitive mode,
yep,
a certain degree.
Yep.
But the team that wins, the quarterback who does the best job is the one who's using more frontal lobes. The one who can see the future.
Yes.
Who can imagine, like a chess game,
yes,
all the possibilities, right? The one who can come into that reptilian sport with the most amount of intelligence is going to do an end run around all those people who are only using 1% of their frontal lobe.
All right, but let's not talk about the quarterback. I see where you're driving there, and you're,
yeah,
absolutely right. Let's talk about the guy who is sitting up on the line, and his job is to crush and possibly break the bones of the guy on the other side the minute the ball is snapped. What about that guy?
Well, I probably, you know, what's going to, if you're talking about someone who has a less thinking kind of
job.
More,
I am, yes.
Yeah. His performance is probably going to be related very much so to things that he does mentally while he's doing that.
Well, generally, mentally, he's sitting there thinking, kill, kill, kill. Gritting his teeth, staring,
yeah,
at the other guy, thinking your mother wears combat boots and worse.
Yeah, right. He won't perform as well as someone who has clicked more into his frontal lobes, although you would sort of think it would be the opposite. Because what he wants his body to perform at its highest potential, correct?
Right.
Okay. Now, when you are clicked into reptilian brain and you are in survival mode and negative thinking, this has an adverse effect on your physiological function.
Okay, but the question was,
yeah,
if he were to do the exercises you are talking about,
yeah,
would it possibly compromise his ability to function in the reptilian manner which he has to do to be successful?
No, I don't think so. You know, look at World War II. You know, the people who won the war were the ones who were better organized, better cooperative, had a better view
it's true.
Of helping people.
It's true.
The good guys won. Okay? The people who were more thinking about the other person, who were more loving, they had to go in and fight like hell, but they did it in a manner that was to help elevate mankind. And so they were better reptiles, as it were.
Huh.
They were able to beat the lesser functioning reptile.
Oh, good analogy. Very good. First time caller line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm in Duluth, Minnesota, the southernmost tip of Lake Superior.
Oh, yes.
Firstly, I must say that your hole punching technique did remind me of a document I read on the internet regarding the cultivation of mushrooms, hallucinogenic mushrooms, psilocybin cubensis, or shrooms, or whatever.
Yeah.
The author of that had said the first time he tried the said fungus, he was able to pick out which clouds in the sky would separate and which would stay whole. And
yeah.
I think he documented this on tape, too. And it's also worth noting that such hallucinogens, when ingested by a person, there's a certain amount of swelling in the frontal lobe,
yeah,
as with LSD. And then I was wondering if there was some sort of correlation.
Oh, yeah. There's a very... I know exactly how psychedelics and hallucinogens work.
Okay,
and,
well, then comment on it.
You know, and I heard your comment last night about that you felt there were many pathways.
Oh, yes.
And hallucinogens were one. And I'm in perfect agreement with you. If you go to central Mexico and you observe the mushroom cults and the curanderas, they've been doing this for thousands of years, and they don't have drug addiction down there. And these people use these hallucinogens in ways that benefit society. So this whole thing about, there are different classes of drugs. Somebody who gets...
And I don't want to encourage anybody to use a hallucinogenic, but generally hallucinogenics are not addictive in the sense that narcotics, our understanding of the way narcotics are addictive.
The chemistry in the brain of tryptamine derivative, and by that we're talking about LSD and mushrooms like the gentleman was just talking about, there's a certain class of chemicals. They can't be lumped together with chemicals like cocaine and heroin and opium. You can't generalize about drugs.
Right.
In terms of hallucinogens in particular, and we're talking about mushrooms and LSD, the way they work is this, and this is how it's connected to the frontal lobes, and why people, when they take these kinds of drugs, sometimes say, I see God, and they have these frontal lobes pop, and they feel like they're one with the universe, and they feel like they learn a lot of information. Your brain has a neurotransmitter called serotonin.
Right.
And what it does is it plugs into the mammal brain and into the gateways in the mammal brain, like at the thalamus and and the amygdala and other, there's a lot of switches in there. And it regulates the flow of information to the frontal lobes, okay? If your frontal lobes were going full blast all the time, you'd never make it down to the supermarket, because everywhere you would turn, God would be talking to you in little dust, you know, particles in the corner of your room.
Sure.
So we have to function on a daily basis, we have to filter out this information. And that's what serotonin does. It's a buffer, it's a filter. And when you take a psilocybin mushroom and you eat that, it has a chemical in it, psilocybin and psilocin, and they are very, very similar to serotonin. So what they do is they flood these gateway switches and they plug into the serotonin receptors,
mm-hmm.
and they block the serotonin action from happening. And what that does then is it allows more information to go through the gateway and go into the frontal lobes. And so colors seem brighter.
Oh, yes.
You start to perceive non-physical entities. You have telepathies that happen. You suddenly have amazing realizations. You see God in the coffee cup that you're drinking out of. And so you get, when you take these kinds of tryptamine-type drugs, it allows more energy to the frontal lobes. We see what's called cascading. You can take PET scans and you can see it's like waves of energy going into the frontal lobes. And so that's what's happening when you take these drugs. But you have to be careful. Here's the problem with the hallucinogens. It's sort of like stoking up the fire in the brain. It's like turning your radio on full blast, okay? If you can keep your amygdala clicked forward, all that energy will go to your frontal lobes, and you'll be at one with the universe, and you'll have a good trip. However, sometimes the experience is so intense or it's so new to someone, they don't know how to deal with it, and it becomes frightening, and you click that extra energy back into your reptile brain, and then you have a bummer trip.
Yep.
Okay? So the main thing is if you find yourself predisposed to experiment with this kind of thing, the first thing you got to do is you got to learn how to click your amygdala forward and click there, because if you take these chemicals and you click backwards, you're going to have a pretty horrible time.
And so it has occurred. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Neil Slade. Hi.
Hi.
Where are you?
My name's Elizabeth, and I'm calling from Peoria, Illinois.
Well, welcome.
Well, thank you.
How's all this playing in Peoria?
It's playing very good. Mm-hmm. And you were talking about Las Vegas. That's where I went to graduate school.
How is it?
And when you said about the stop, the lights, I definitely experienced that. But I did have this is kind of my question. I had a car accident when I was in graduate school.
Right.
It was in 94, and it was on Jones and Lake Mead, and I suffered severe skull trauma.
Oh, boy.
And for about 6 months after that, all sorts of out-of-body experiences. I could look out the window. This particular one happened once. I looked out the window, and like a block down, I saw people, and I could actually hear what they were saying, but it wasn't like, it was like through my mind. And I jumped out of my body when I was sleeping to turn off my radio. Lots of things happened. Could my switches have got like stuck open for a while?
All right. Oh, that's a beautiful question. And I'll back it up by adding people who have had near-death experiences have also, for periods of time after them, acquired very serious psychic powers. When there's physical trauma, Neil, are these people suddenly, is something occurring in their brains that's throwing the switch?
It sounds like that. Now, I'm not a neurosurgeon, and I can't be any more specific than I've been. But when we're talking, you know, the way that we looked at all these paranormal activities at the brain lab, and the way I've come to look at them, is we're not talking about philosophy. We're talking about actual electrochemical pathways. These are physical things.
So a physical trauma could indeed cause some changes in the routing up there.
Oh, it absolutely will.
All right, hold on, Neil. We're at the bottom of the hour again to get a copy of this very important... The early morning hours must do strange things to you. I was listening to that commercial. He said it was like sleeping on a cloud. So I'm, you know, mentally picturing these people up there sleeping on a cloud. And then somebody like Neil Slade down on the ground dissipating the cloud, and like a Roadrunner movie, down they come. Hi, Neil. We're back on the air again, and a lot of people want to talk to you.
All right. You know, I would remind people, you know, what I did, I made a little index card with the state of Florida and my smiley faces and rain. I'm going to put one on my refrigerator, and I'm going to put one on the dashboard of my car and on my... bathroom window, so I think about this constantly for the next day.
You did hear that change in weather report I read you, didn't you?
Yeah, I wouldn't surprise me if we see something in the next few hours. You just see a cloud appear over this thing. But, you got to stick with it for something of that scale. You got to stick with it for a while.
You also have to scientifically verify it. So, in other words, if this occurs, if this seemingly works, then we've got to try it again. In a different area, under different circumstances.
Yeah.
And we've got to kind of build the case slowly, but it's fascinating.